Welcome, everyone, to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
I hope you're ready to get uncomfortable, because that's what this show does, push you out of your comfort zone, because we're covering the stories the mainstream media won't cover and diving deep into some topics that has them scared tonight. We're going to talk about the latest out of Ukraine, specifically around peace negotiations. Did Vladimir Putin just do the unthinkable, perhaps, and actually float the idea of peace? I think he's done this multiple times, but we're also talking about the ramping up of nuclear attacks, because it appears this dirty bomb, this false flag operation, is fully engaged and could be happening at any moment. We're going to give you the very latest details from multiple sources and multiple angles on that story tonight.
Plus, Democrats are already warning that the results of the election may be problematic. Stop me if you think that you've heard this one before.
And you might be a ableist. Get ready to learn that word, because if you think that any of our elected leaders, if they have cognition problems or other reasons that they are unfit for office, it's your fault. It is your fault. You are part of the problem. We're going to go through the latest unbelievable stories as it relates to the election tonight on the show.
And the city of New York, this is going to fight back against this Supreme Court ruling that says that they cannot enforce vaccine mandates for public city employees. How are they going to fight that when their ruling was so full of holes? It was like a colander. We're going to break down that story and what it might mean for the rest of us who maybe did or did not comply with vaccine mandate.
So all of that and more, if you subscribe to the channel, like we just had a few subscribers, just your name will pop right up here on the big screen. Are you ready to get uncomfortable on this Thursday? Because Redacted starts right now. To Redacted on this Thursday. We hope you're doing well, gearing up for Halloween. Have you got your Halloween costume ready to go yet? I don't know. Philip, David, I don't know what you guys are going as, but I used to get it planned out months ahead of time, and now I feel like, oh my gosh, I haven't really thought about it much.
You can borrow some of my makeup. Don't worry.
Okay.
I'm going as your Redacted producer this year.
Okay. Yeah.
I have a standard, like I've just had this like crappy Deadpool costume that if I need to wear a costume, I put that on, and that's what I am. I'm Deadpool.
Like it.
I like that. I had a crab costume where I'm like a giant crab, and it's like, I can't wear a crab again. I got to come up with something. So anyway, let us know in the chat. Are you guys dressing up this year? Let us know what you're going as this year. So we do have a daily newsletter. I hope you subscribe, because we had a really funny story in the daily newsletter today, which was all about Spirit Halloween, and it's a very funny story, and you wouldn't know about it if you're not a newsletter subscriber. So you need to go to redacted.inc. Redacted.inc is the place to go. You can subscribe. Just put in your email address. You'll get a welcome email from us, and then you have to confirm that welcome email. You have to confirm and verify. So it might wind up in your spam folder, might wind up in your junk folder, your promotions folder, wherever else. So please go and click on that and subscribe and just verify that. And you'll get the newsletter first thing in the morning delivered to your inbox.
That is also where we keep our community. If you'd like to become a community member, we appreciate that very much, because we would like to continue to not be as dependent on this as the streaming platforms that we run on right now, because of the shifting rules of engagement on said platforms.
Yes, on said platform. So you can become a VIP. Our goal by the end of the year is to become to hit 3,000 Redacted Rebel VIP members. So please, if you'd like to support what we do here as independent journalists, we would love that very, very much. So really interesting times. I mean, overnight, we're going to see Elon Musk taking full control of Twitter. Billions of dollars are already being transferred, according to sources, over through bank accounts. So we could wake up on Friday morning and Twitter is officially now transferred over to Elon Musk. How many people will be out of a job at Twitter? I don't like ever, you know, saying people out of a job, but it's going to be really interesting to see what happens now.
Well, rumor has it that he sort of dispelled those rumors and said, I'm not actually coming here to fire a bunch of people, but we will have to wait and see. Obviously, he won't do it the first day.
Well, what was the memo?
There was a memo that went out to the Twitter employees, and it said, if you see Elon, look busy.
Yeah. That's pretty good. He doesn't like remote work. He's not that kind of boss. He wants you there
He's
and
like
doing
Clue
some
from
stuff.
Tron.
That's right.
He doesn't dig imperfection, man.
Well, hey, we've got a busy show on this Thursday. So let's start with the very latest on nuclear brinksmanship in Ukraine. So the question this morning, this afternoon, this evening, wherever you are around the world, is did Vladimir Putin just do the unthinkable and deliver a message to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky telling him that he's open to peace talks? Talking peace, ending this war. Well, he kind of did it in a roundabout way. Now, because Zelensky won't talk to Putin directly, Putin had to send a message through an intermediary yesterday during a press conference. Umaro Mokhtar Sisoko Imbalo, that is who you're seeing there on your screen, shaking hands. He is the president of Guinea-Bissau. He's shaking hands with Zelensky. And during this press conference, he asked him to convey a message to Zelensky about the importance of direct dialogue between Moscow and Kiev. And he said during this press conference, and it was actually posted on Zelensky's Telegram channel later with subtitles. There they are in this press conference. It caught everyone by surprise, by the way. This was not like a planned moment. But he said, "My dear brother, yesterday I was in Russia with President Putin, who asked me to give you a message to talk to you, considering that a direct dialogue is very important for our future joint actions." And before this meeting with Zelensky, Imbalo told journalists that he found Putin to be very open to negotiating with Zelensky and that he was looking forward to conveying this goodwill to the Ukrainian leader.
This is not very surprising to those of us who have actually been listening to what Vladimir Putin and other Russian politicians have been saying, that they will continue to offer to come to peace talks. But the Western, you wouldn't know that if you watched Western media, because Western media makes it seem like all they want to do is continue to drop bombs. But he said it in the speech when he announced the mobilization of 300,000 additional troops. He said he's been continuously willing to come to peace talks. He said that the West is the one that is sort of, getting in the way of that,
right.
And that he will do it at any time. So, you know, given that Zelensky continues to say no and does not surround himself with anyone who will even suggest it, it's interesting that somebody sort of broached the line and said it in his presence, because that's just something that's not been allowed.
So Russia,
I bet all those Congress progressives are unhappy, because they're like, oh man, Zelensky's going to negotiate peace on his own, and we just retracted that letter. If we would have just let that stand for another day,
right,
we could have been the ones that were like on the side of peace.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We were the ones pushing for peace. Instead, we retracted our letter and blamed it on our staff members. Well, Russia just a few moments ago clarified this message. And this is from Dmitry Peskov, who said, "Well, our colleague from the African state said he would have contacts with Zelensky and that he would relay Putin's position to the Ukrainian side, sort of an open dialogue. He's willing to negotiate." But he said there was no specific message. So we want to be specific. We want to be on point about that. There wasn't like Putin handed him a message. Here, take this to Zelensky. It was more of a,
he was expressing a sentiment, passing along a sentiment that he knows that the Russian president would agree with. There was no like, we didn't say that. We're not doing peace. This is them saying, this is what we talked about. Yes, but we didn't, pull a Marty McFly and put a letter in the jacket pocket type thing.
Right. Zelensky then did reject this offer and said, in order to build bridges, you shouldn't be blowing up infrastructure. I guess he didn't think about the fact that they just blew up a bridge. So,
which is infrastructure,
the Crimean Bridge. So no peace. And the United States has zero interest in peace talks. Yesterday, the United States lied right to our faces about Putin and about peace. Again, the Western media lying to you. This is why you need to see through all of these, smoke signals. John Kirby had the balls to get up there at the podium yesterday, at the White House podium, at this very same day that Putin is relaying a message of peace and willing to negotiate. John Kirby gets up there and he lies right to the American people. Watch.
We're stepping back just a little bit. This is, Karine alluded to this at the top. It's another, this whole relationship is another indication of how isolated both nations are from the rest of the international community. It's also an indication of two things in my mind. One, Putin has no intention of sitting down at the negotiating table anytime soon.
Oh, Really?
I guess you also don't listen to his speeches. I mean, they are not in his native language, so I guess he doesn't bother.
But their counterparts called Washington last week to tell them about peace negotiations. So he's lying. And we heard from Lloyd Austin. We heard from John.
He did say to my mind. So it's just something he doesn't comprehend.
Oh, to my mind.
He's a government employee.
Good point.
They don't understand that.
He might have called and talked to my mind. Yes. Yeah. To my mind. I'm going to start using that.
To my mind. Yeah. To my mind, gravity doesn't exist. So
to my mind, guys. I'm going to do that when our kids are like, you know, to my mind.
Or when a creditor calls. To my mind, I don't owe this bill.
Right.
You might think so.
You were speeding. Now, to my mind, I wasn't. Can I get out of this part? The speeding ticket. To my mind, I was not. Thank you, John Kirby. Now, meanwhile, Caitlin Johnstone, of course, who's one of the biggest advocates for peace in the world, and she takes so much hate for it. We're huge fans of her writings here on this show. Caitlin Johnstone tweeted this. She said, Putin is responsible for Putin's decisions. The U.S. empire is responsible for the U.S. empire's decisions. Putin is responsible for deciding to invade. The U.S. empire is responsible for the mountains of well-documented aggressions which provoked that decision. This isn't complicated. And then she goes on. That demands pushback, Herculean pushback. The fact that most powerful and belligerent power structure on the face of this earth is predominantly viewed as having no responsibility for the extremely dangerous war it's deliberately provoked demands aggressive opposition. Then she says, the U.S. indisputably deliberately provoked this war. The U.S. is indisputably keeping this war going. The U.S. is indisputably using this war to advance its geostrategic interests in Europe and Asia. These are facts. When facts are taboo, you are living in a world of lies. So, yes, no peace for you. No peace for you. Meanwhile, we're getting closer to nuclear war this evening. The Russian government has told the United Nations that they have unequivocal evidence that NATO and the NATO-led regime is ready to launch a false flag, dirty bomb nuclear attack. They gave them specifics about it, where it's located, how it's going to happen. Here's The Guardian on it. Then no indication Russia has decided to use nuclear weapons, the U.S. says. Oh, so the U.S. says we see no evidence that Russia is preparing to launch a dirty bomb nuclear attack. Oh, so then who is?
That doesn't mean it's not there.
Right. We're telling you it's there. But to my mind, maybe it's not. I don't know. I have an idea who might be planning this. The same people that have been attacking the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant over the past few months, right? That's who. The U.S. has responded. They said they see no evidence that any of this is going along. So go on with your day. Even though multiple sources are saying that this is happening. We're getting more details about this upcoming nuclear attack, including how it's going to unfold. Journalist Fiorella Isabel saying this from sources, per a Ukrainian journalist. The dirty bomb is to be planned by someone from Belarus. The Russian Iskander missile, made on the basis of the Tochka-U, okay, I'll explain that in a second, will be filled with radioactive material and downed over Chernobyl to minimize consequences. Because, you know, Chernobyl, who wants to live there? Real estate prices are, you don't really want to live in Chernobyl. And it would allow Zelensky to blame Russia and Belarus, she says. So according to a Ukrainian journalist, not Russian journalist, a Ukrainian journalist and confirmed by other intelligence sources and other journalists from inside Russia and beyond, the dirty nuclear bomb is to be planned by someone from Belarus. The Russian Iskander missile, made on the basis of Tochka-U, so will be filled with radioactive material and downed over Chernobyl. So here is some of the bullet points on what this will be. Made in Belarus using a Russian Iskander missile, or it could be disguised as looking like a Russian missile, but it'll actually be the Tochka-U. We'll show you in a second. It'll be filled with radioactive material, dropped over Chernobyl, and allows them to blame both Russia and Belarus.
I mean, I guess the idea is that a lot of the soil in Chernobyl and even, you know, by some, the food is still contaminated from nuclear fallout from so many years ago. So they're like, well, they're used to it.
Well, just put it there because, you know, no one's going back to Chernobyl anytime soon. It's a wasteland. It's a ghost town. So no one's going there anyway. Let's do it there.
People do live there.
Yeah.
in and around those regions.
Have you ever seen the documentaries on it? I don't know if you've ever seen.
No, I won't watch that. You probably know.
Not the HBO show. The actual documentary is about it. It's just horrible. No, it's terrifying.
We have a joke in our house that I'll read like super messed up books, but I can't watch things like that. And I was reading a book recently about some ladies who are in their 60s carrying eggs in Chernobyl. And someone's like, "Are you going to eat that?" And she's like, "I'm 60. I might as well. What's going to do at this point, you know?" So there are people who live with these risks even still. And it's not like they're used to it. It's not like it won't harm them. Of course it would.
So the source claims that the Kiev regime plans to shoot down the missile with air defenses and then claim the dirty bomb is a result of a Russian nuclear attack. That's the plan. It's also alleged the missile is in fact a Ukrainian Tochka-U projectile. So this is what they look like, that will be disguised to look like one of Russia's Iskander missiles. So these are Ukrainian Tochka-U missiles that you're seeing here on your screen. And so that they would be disguised, it would be one of these disguised.
Look at those black clouds. Do not tell me to have plastic straws.
Right. Your plastic bag at the grocery store is contaminating the planet. But this is fine.
Wonder how much they pay for their diesel.
And that corn in that cornfield. Would you eat that corn? This corn is cooked by a Tochka-U. So after the dummy is shot down, the Kiev authorities intend to show Western and Ukrainian media fragments of the mocked up electronic elements of the alleged missile to convince the Western public, look, it's Russian built, the sources say. So after the United Nations meeting yesterday, Russia said, we made our point very clear. We told in this behind the closed door meeting with 15 member body, we told them, we laid out the evidence. The Russian ambassador said, speaking of allegations, I can refer you to the situation in Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. It's an open secret that Ukraine is shelling that power plant. And we saw HIMARS as well attacking it. So that's NATO-backed attacks, as Scott Ritter pointed out on our show, and other intelligence analysts we've had it on our show pointing out Western attacks on the nuclear power plant. And he said, because we have absolutely no reason to shell that plant while we are present there. So if Ukrainians are shelling that plant in front of the whole international community, creating a danger of a nuclear provocation, so why wouldn't they create a dirty bomb? It's the same logic, he says. Yesterday, Putin, proving that he's not fooling around then, said that they would use nuclear weapons to strike back if Ukraine and NATO launched a nuclear dirty bomb. So this is Putin around his nuclear table. This is different than the other rooms we've seen. But
yeah,
this
they
is,
don't have the plastic phones.
Well, there's some
actually
plastic
there,
phones, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
This is like his version of the Situation Room.
Mm-hmm.
So he was there sitting in his version of the Situation Room yesterday, carrying out a nuclear test strike practice run with his whole team. They said everything went off without a hitch. They hit all targets. So let's go through what they accomplished yesterday.
Well, even the Pentagon had warned us that Russia was going to do this and had said, we know that they're following the rules. It's all okay. And I was like, what's this? You're saying this is fine? Because they ran these same exercises last year and you said that wasn't fine.
Well, maybe the reason they said it was fine is because the next day, we'll get to that in a second, the Pentagon did the very same thing. Like, you know, basically doing their own version of these tests.
I had to read that story five times. I'm like, you're saying this is okay. Okay, we don't have to freak.
You're telling me there's a chance.
Okay.
So Putin, speaking during these nuclear tests, said a few things. Here's what he said, what they accomplished. He said, first of all, he said the training is being conducted to deliver a massive nuclear strike in response to an enemy nuclear strike, he said in this room, in his circular situation room. He said various intercontinental and cruise missiles were launched. All targets planned within the framework of the exercise were hit and destroyed. Launches from nuclear submarines, mobile missile systems, and long-range aircraft also practiced. Putin also said that Ukraine has become a testing ground for biological experiences, and its threat is equal to the scale of ISIS. Putin reiterated Russia's aware of a dirty bomb plan, and reiterated that again yesterday. Putin also said this conflict for potential nuclear fallout and conflict in the world right now is very high, very high. Those are Putin's words on nuclear conflict. Very high.
I don't like those words.
So the U.S. in response, you think, okay, maybe now's the time for peace talks. Now's the time to talk peace, save humanity. No. What is according to Politico this afternoon, what is the United States doing? Is speeding up its nuclear plan to upgrade nukes throughout Europe. Lloyd Austin speaking yesterday. The United States has accelerated the fielding of more accurate versions of its mainstay nuclear bomb to NATO bases in Europe. So sending more nukes to Europe, according to United States diplomatic cable and two people familiar with the issue. The arrival of the upgraded B-61-12 airdropped gravity bombs were originally slated for next spring. They're now being planned for this December, just in time for the holidays. Like, this is their Santa Claus version of delivery. This is what the Pentagon does.
Oh, with a bow?
Were you a good little boy, Emmanuel Macron? Because here...
So we could have nuclear winter for Christmas?
Right.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't have snow, call the Pentagon. Because I know it's getting warmer in some places, so you might not have snow. Call the Pentagon. We'll create a nuclear winter so your ski resorts can open. So that's what they're doing. That's what the U.S. is doing, ramping up. Again, it's like they're willfully ignorant about this, dirty bomb thing. I just can't... It's almost like if you think about... What's Dr. Strangelove? You know, it's like, really? Like, you're just willfully ignoring this? That we could all be in the middle of a nuclear war? They're telling you, here is the evidence. You're saying, no, we're not going to pay attention to it. We're basically ignoring it. We don't see it. And then Russia does this massive nuclear practice run.
I mean, they did not even want to respond to this at all. It was the press that asked them, do you have a response to this? And they're like, yeah, basically, this is the response. Like, no response. We saw the words. We don't believe them. We're not going on that.
We'd rather hold meetings at the White House with, I don't know, on woke activists.
I mean, again, it's much like the Nord Stream pipeline when Russia said, hey, you know, we got to keep an eye on them, what they're up to. They've said they don't like this and they won't let it go forward. Then it's actually bombed and they try to blame Russia for it. And they're like, how does that make sense? Come on. You know, they just sort of, they bank on the fact that you're too stupid to follow this narrative.
Yeah. And we're not apologizing for anything. What we're saying is peace now, regardless of where we are in this. Like, okay, you did this, you did that. It doesn't matter at this point. Like, yes, the provocation, the invasion, all of those things. Okay, now we're here. We're at nuclear brinksmanship. Let's talk. Let's end this madness now.
They should want to do that, even if there were the slightest chance of peace. Like, if it was just a sliver, they should encourage that. They should pursue it.
Right.
Like, yeah. Because, like, you got to think of all the people. The entire world will be harmed from this outcome if they
don't. Yes, as President Vucic from Serbia has said, you know, it's better to rage peace talks for 100 years than even one day of war. So they don't have to figure it out in one day. Just keep going there, showing that you care about people. Just keep talking.
Yeah. Well, we're going to keep talking. We've got a lot more news to get to here on this Thursday. Thank you so much for subscribing. Hey, a new rebel, Mark W., just signed up and subscribed. Thank you, Mark, for becoming a new rebel. If you subscribe, it'll pop right up here on the big board. Thank you so much for being a part of what we do here. We're going to cover the Democratic warnings on the elections. It's amazing. It's almost like they're reading from a script. We're going to look
at... And why can they say that? That's, right. You know, how come that's allowed?
Double standard. Is there a double standard? Let us know in the chat room right now. Do you think maybe, David, we could even put up a poll later to see if there's a double standard in politics right now about free speech? And also, John Fetterman, we're going to look at the very latest on that race in Pennsylvania and what you are being called if you think that he is not cognitively able to hold office. We'll look at that. Plus, we're going to look at COVID mandates in the state of New York. So all of that and more. But first, let's talk about what's happening with this election. So Democrats are preparing for one of the worst elections in their history. They are preparing to lose the House of Representatives. They are, along with the Senate, as Americans care more about kitchen table issues, like we've talked about here on the show, they care about their energy bills. They care about gas prices. They care. I was thinking about it today. I'm like, of the things I care about the safety of my family.
Yes.
My kids, right? Protecting them against crime, making sure they're safe, making sure they have healthy food to eat and a roof over their head. Like, that's what I do as a father, right? That's my main focus. I can tell you what's not on that list. All of your woke political agenda items that are way down at the bottom. Stuff that might be fun to talk about with friends, but I don't really give a shit.
They're going to be running primarily on social issues. That's like their whole thing is social issues. They're not even focused on the economy because that's the bad, you know, part of their platform right now. They don't
even
want to talk about
that. Well, they're very heavy on abortion right now. They're making that almost a single issue.
That's their number one issue.
Yeah, It's
yeah. And by the way, it's the least issue. Like, if you look at the list of issues, it's at the bottom of what most voters actually care about. So they're running that. It's like, who came up with this idea? And this is, you know, this is the idea, right?
No,
January 6th, insert, you know, that's their January 6th and abortion, top of their list.
Which are buzzworthy, which are things, I think that they are misinterpreting buzz on the internet with political engagement. Because yes, I can work myself into a frenzy over these issues that are gendered, that are classist and that kind of thing. But that's not why you vote.
No.
A lot of people are not driven to the polls just to save abortion, but they actually think that that's the case.
Now, here's the thing.
And the numbers don't support that.
You do vote that way during peacetime and when things are good. So when things are good and you have money in the bank and you're safe and there's no crime and all of those other things, then those like kitchen, then those kitchen table items kind of go out the window. It's the cultural stuff that actually can move an election like in Ohio under George W. Bush.
Right.
If people paid attention anyway, they would know, though, the Democrats already had a chance to codify Roe v. Wade, and they didn't do it. So they had a chance to fix this already. So they think now they're going to go ahead and do something different.
Yeah.
So it's like even their main issue falls apart if you are educated and know what they've done in the past.
Yes. But abortion was something that was very important to Trump voters during peacetime when they thought that he would have Supreme Court nominations, which he did. But in this instance, what are Democrats even thinking that they're going to change during abortion is something federal, which Democrats have not shown the appetite to do.
Well, the number one issue for Americans during the Trump run up was the border, and it was jobs being outsourced and the lack of jobs, like jobs disappearing overseas and the border and immigration. And guess what? He said, build a wall and I'm going to bring jobs back home. Stop jobs going overseas. And yes, abortion was a part of it. But in the Rust Belt in Pennsylvania, it was about jobs. It's always about jobs. It's the economy, stupid. And so look at this Senate map today. This is the latest Senate map. This is a real clear politics average right now. Polling. Here's the most recent polling this morning. Shows Senate flipping entirely to Republicans, 53-47. It's going to be a really bad night for them on November 8th. It was also inevitable that they would start sounding the alarm. Democrats would start sounding the alarm that the very integrity of our election system is under attack by right-wing extremists, hell-bent on changing the outcome of the election. That's what they're telling us now. We should point out that if you challenge the integrity of the election system in the United States, you could be deplatformed for spreading misinformation.
Well, only if it's a specific year.
Oh,
you can
right.
do it if it's 2016. Yes. You can do it if it's 2024 and upcoming, but there's one year you cannot tie it to.
You cannot mention that year. I love the double standards, right? So it's very strange then that this person is doing just that, trying to keep people from going out to vote because they might get attacked by vicious hordes of people if they do go to vote. Watch.
Hello, Indivisibles. I'm here to highlight something that is keeping me up at night. And I know this group really understands what I'm about to say. I know we're all focused on the 2022 midterm elections, and they are incredibly important. But we also have to look ahead, because you know what? Our opponents certainly are. Right-wing extremists already have a plan to literally steal the next presidential election.
Oh.
And they're not making a secret of it. The right-wing-controlled Supreme Court may be poised to rule on giving state legislatures, yes, you heard me that correctly, state legislatures the power to overturn presidential elections. Just think, if that happens, the 2024 presidential election could be decided not by the popular vote, or even by the anachronistic Electoral College, but by state legislatures.
Oh,
you don't like the Electoral College now.
Can I just point out really quick as a video guy, that's a horrible teleprompter placement because you could see that she was reading that like so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I you could see her eyes. You could see the like right there. You knew she's reading a script. Someone wrote this script and presented that. I have a very important message. Right-wing extremists are already planning to throw a wrench into this election on November 8th. We cannot let them do that. So they challenge elections. They get amplified, right? when they challenge them, they get amplified. But when the other side does it, they get deplatformed. You see, this is a brilliant tactic because the majority of early voting has already, I mean, the majority of early voting has historically been Democrat. Early votes typically are Democrat. And Republicans historically wait and vote at on election day at the polls. That is the data. So now that early voting is pretty much done, they've been doing it now for a month in some areas. Now would be a great time to start scaring people about going out and voting on election day, especially if you're an independent voter. Like, you know, you might be on the fence. Well, I would just probably, maybe it's best for your own safety. You know, that's what they're saying. Don't go. Maybe you just don't want to go. We've got all of our votes in, so no need to throw in some other votes for the other side right now. We've got our blue votes in. Just, you know, maybe those red votes, you don't need to go because it's a safety concern. So here's a tweet from Greg Price. He says, questioning elections when Democrats win makes you a dangerous insurrection. Questioning elections when Republicans win makes you a hero. Those are the rules of the media.
Yes.
Now, Hillary isn't the only one saying this. Because now it's like they're reading from that same script that she was just reading from, because they know they're going to lose. Democrats across the country are now using the same tactic. Here's Clint Smith in Arizona.
These are the same white nationalists who are anti-American, who want to use intimidation tactics to try to get their way. It's the same people that are down there at the polling booths trying to intimidate voters. This needs to stop.
Yeah.
Well, then how do you stop it? Because there are anti-intimidation laws, there are anti-campaigning laws around polling places. So we've had things in place, structures in place for a really long time to make it safe to vote. So I don't know, what's your police force for? What's, you know, you
can... Well, I think the concern is the drop boxes and stuff. Like, because of what happened, you know, during that 1 year, there's going to be people that are going to be watching like hawks, the voting,
the integrity
the drop
of those boxes
and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be armed hordes. I mean, you just got to watch out, right? It's going to be, you might run into a militia.
Yeah.
Right. So the White House is now pushing the same message, this garbage argument that people simply, you know, can't vote in certain states because of laws that are stopping them from voting. You know, this is a problem. Listen to Jean-Pierre on the voting problems.
Host of anti-voter policies forced on states that challenge America's fundamental right to vote, right? The access to voting. And so this is against our most basic values and include.
Oh, well, meanwhile, there's zero evidence of this. So I'd love for a reporter to push back on that. Can you please show us the evidence of this where someone is being kept from voting? Like they go to vote. Or they go to file an early ballot or early voting, and they're turned away. They're intimidated and told they can't do it. Show us the evidence. I'd love to see it, because you're not going to find it.
But they did ask Trump for evidence when he started this in the run-up for the last election. He was pushed on it, and they laughed right in his face. Mm-hmm. They're like, you don't have evidence. Knock it off. And so for the press corps to let her say this without pushing back, okay.
Yeah, so there's zero evidence. Higher voter turnout and voter suppression happen at the same time. How does that occur? So they have incredibly high early voting turnout, but yet voters are being suppressed. Can you square that for me? Like, doesn't really make sense, does it? Like, how are you squaring this? I don't understand it. But she said that with a straight face, and I'm looking for the evidence. I can't find any. If you have some, I'd love to see it. In fact, in Georgia, voting is already breaking records for turnout there, much higher than in 2018, in fact. Watch a reporter give Jean-Pierre the straight scoop and the straight facts on what's happening in Georgia and asks her to clarify a message from President Biden a few years ago. Watch.
Biden last year likened the new Georgia voting law to, quote, Jim Crow in the 21st century. But turnout so far in the state's midterm elections has smashed midterm records. Today it topped 1 million votes overall. That's about 70% more than 2018, on par with the presidential election turnout. Was President Biden wrong with this assessment of Georgia's voting law, or does he stand by that Jim Crow comparison?
So, as you know, I got to be careful. I cannot get into politics from here, so won't comment specifically on that race or on the elections or the data that's coming out.
Okay, so, but that had, nice dodge there, because that actually had nothing to do with the race. He was asking you about what your boss said last year. So you work for this guy, right? He's your boss. These were his comments. That has nothing to do with the race. She's not asking.
Yeah, but that's political though, Clayton. We can't can't talk politics there.
Good dodge. Gets you off the hook with that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Pennsylvania, this is amazing. We want to talk about election integrity. Let's look at Pennsylvania, my home state. This morning, we got word from the Pennsylvania Secretary of State's office that they will likely not have the results of the election on election night. What? Yeah, the Pennsylvania Secretary of State, she's the acting Secretary of State, Leah Chapman, revealed that there will likely be delays in posting the results from the state's midterm elections. She says, quote, "It's really important for us to get accurate information about the election process in Pennsylvania so voters and the public know that when there are delays in counting, it doesn't mean that there's anything nefarious happening. It's just that it's just what the law is in Pennsylvania. So it could be delayed up to 8 days or even longer in Pennsylvania." Wait a minute. So the millions of dollars and all of the campaigning and videos you've put out there for early voting and everything else that you've done, we're ready to go. Pennsylvania, early vote. Our election system is rock solid. I've seen the videos. We're ready to go here in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Like, we've got everything taken care of. Oh, but now we might not be able to count the votes on time. Like, we have that problem on our hands. Really?
Well, they got to deal with the Fetterman blowback, you know.
Yeah. One potato, two potato.
What? Let me count this. I wonder if this has anything to do with the hundreds of thousands of additional ballots, the unverified ballots that were just mailed out in Pennsylvania without authorization. Maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe this is part of the story you haven't heard yet. Listen to this in Pennsylvania. 15 state Republican representatives sent a letter to the acting Secretary of State after they discovered over 240,000 illicit ballots were mailed in the state prior to the 2022 midterm elections. 240,000 illicit ballots sent out that shouldn't have been sent out. Here's their letter. "Dear Acting Secretary, we, the undersigned members, are writing with great concern about the process used to ensure that only qualified legal voters vote in the 2022 general election. Due to the 2018 directive from your office instructing counties to register voters without verification of identity, the need to verify the identity and eligibility of mail and absentee ballot applications is even more critical to the integrity of our elections. As of October 21st, 2022, records of the mail ballot data shows that counties have already mailed over 240,000 unverified ballots." So what does this mean? Well, the letter notes two main contradictory statements that have been coming out of the Secretary of State's office and the Deputy Secretary of Elections, so who testified in court that unverified ballots can still be mailed out to applicants but wouldn't be counted officially in the election until an ID was produced. Okay. The other comment, which was contradictory, claimed that ballots cannot be sent out in the first place until an ID is first provided. So
which
what
is
it? Either you're going to send out the ballots without ID verification, or you're going to wait till the end and get the ID verification, or you're going to wait to get the ID verification before you send them out. What is it? We don't know. So we just sent out 240 ballots.
Hope they don't come back.
Whether you have ID or not, we don't give a shit. We'll just send them out. And by the way, I'm from Pennsylvania. It's a very, very, you know, tight race typically, right? And so you have like just 10,000 votes can swing an election.
Yeah.
So you sent out 240,000 unverified ballots. Okay. Nothing to see here. No problems. So they say either the ballots were mailed to unverified applicants or ballots are not mailed to unverified applicants. Both statements cannot be true. And they talk about the election verification system, which is the HAVV system, the verification data. And they said that and you can actually read this for yourself. You can actually go to the website and see it right on the Social Security Administration's website to verify the accuracy of the name, the date of birth, last four digits of your Social Security, and the ID, whether or not you're going to get one of these ballots. And right now, yes, 249,000 of these sent out without the verification. So there you go. Thanks.
That's very strange.
I mean, so the fix is in, guys. I mean, I think Democrats in the United States are girding themselves for a really dark day in early November. It's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens both in Pennsylvania, and we're going to talk more about that in a second. Just also nationwide, Arizona and Michigan, New York. I'm watching that race very closely. The New York governor's race, Kathy Hochul and Lee Zeldin. That's going to be fascinating to watch. And so we could see a sea change here.
Yes, but history tells us that the president's party almost always loses the midterm. Mm-hmm. That's normal. And so it sort of astounds me that every time it happens, people act like it's a big drama. We expect it. We expect it even more because we have such an unpopular president where members of his own party don't even want him to campaign for them. They're like, no, you don't need to come and stump for me. We're good. We're good here. And so because of the extreme unpopularity of the president, the terrible economy and the war that was not happening when this president took office and now is, we expect a bloodbath even more than history would already tell us.
Yeah, we'll see, though. Biden's going to be campaigning for John Fetterman in Pennsylvania, and President Trump is also going to be going out for Dr. Oz out in the western part in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I would not want to see a speech with Fetterman and Biden.
Yeah, can you imagine that?
We're going to talk about the two of them together, and not in a way that makes fun of people, in a way that just sort of questions why can't we, well, question.
Yeah.
But first, we're going to tell you about our friends over at Indeed. Now, rapid growth for your business doesn't have to come with growing pains. When you have ambitious hiring goals and you need a partner to help you, you need Indeed. Indeed is a hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills, you can do it all with Indeed. Find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed's Instant Match, assessment, and virtual interviews. Hate waiting? Well, Indeed's U.S. data shows that over 80% of Indeed employers find quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job. So you don't have to hold on until you get the right person. And don't make your candidates jump through hoops. Indeed's virtual interview tool means there's nothing to download. Just click and talk. Indeed knows that when you're growing your business, you have to make every dollar count. That's why when you sponsor a job, you only pay for quality applicants from resumes in our database matching system that matches your job description. So visit Indeed.com/redacted to start hiring right now. Again, that's Indeed.com/redacted. Indeed.com/redacted. Terms and conditions apply. Cost per applicant pricing not available for everyone. But if you need to hire, you need Indeed.
You do indeed. All right. We've got more news to get to here on this Thursday. We're going to talk about Fetterman in a second. And COVID mandates. You're going to want to hear about both of these stories. But first, get ready to learn a whole new woke term. Let me do that again. Sorry. Take two. Get ready to learn a whole new woke term this evening. It's a term that I wasn't terribly familiar with until recently. The word is ableism, or being an ableist. Are you an ableist? Let us know in the chat if you're an ableist. You might be.
Is that a fan of Abraham Lincoln? Is that what that is?
No. Although that would be a good one. Are you an ableist? Are you an Abe Lincolnist? No.
That's abophile.
An abophile.
Oh.
I've just made it up.
No, but you might be. You might be an ableist according to the tolerant left. See if you recognize this definition from Access Living. Ableism is the discrimination of and social prejudice against people with disabilities based on the belief that typical abilities are superior. At its heart, ableism is rooted in the assumption that disabled people require fixing and defines people by their disability. So it's a discrimination, social prejudice against people with disabilities based on the belief that normal abilities, typical abilities, are superior.
Okay.
I see that. So if you think someone is unfit, though, for elected office because of, say, Alzheimer's or dementia or a stroke that has left them cognitively impaired, you might be an ableist. So just put a pin in this term for a minute because you're about to hear a lot more of it. In the run-up to Tuesday night's Pennsylvania Senate debate between Dr. Oz and Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, very few reporters were asking tough questions about the health and wellness of Fetterman. After all, we learned in the springtime that he did suffer a stroke. We only learned this later. His doctor then came out with a note, a report saying he's great, everything's fine, no problems at all, he's fit to serve. His wife said the same thing.
He
said the same thing. He said publicly, I'm fine, I feel great, no problems here, nothing to worry about. Okay, so shut up then. Don't ask any questions, even though it was clear to anybody who was watching that he was cognitively impaired at any speech he'd given. Why wouldn't he debate until after early voting was nearly completed? Why not in early September, where we see a debate between himself and Dr. Oz? Early voting starts very early in Pennsylvania, so let's wait till the last possible second before we do this debate.
They offered him two practices with the prompter that they were going to give him, and he refused. He only wanted to do one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and he wanted it. There were going to be three debates, and he said, no, just the one. So just one debate. So it was clear to anybody watching him over the past number of months that he was cognitively impaired and couldn't complete sentences. A reporter for NBC News did the brave thing and asked him some tough questions ahead of the debate, which led her to be eviscerated on Twitter. They called her an ableist. Watch this exchange.
Asked for your medical records. We've asked to have a conversation with someone from your medical team to interview your physician. You've declined those requests. Why?
Well, I feel like we have been very transparent in a lot of different ways. When our doctor has already given a letter saying that I'm able to serve and to be running.
I mean, respectfully, that letter from your physician, that was 6 months ago. Don't voters deserve to know your status now?
Being on in front of thousands and thousands of people and having interviews and getting around all across Pennsylvania, that gives everybody and the voters decide, you know, if they think that it's really the issue.
So she was roasted.
Bless her. I mean, she's young and she's sincere, and those were super fair questions.
Yeah, yeah. It was very fair. In fact, she was then roasted for this interview online. You're an ableist for doing this interview, they wrote. Eviscerated her. She had to issue a follow-up statement on Twitter about it. And you're doing this interview, you're promoting ableism, they said.
Well, but I take issue with that, because ableism is rooted in the assumption that disabled people require fixing, she's not saying you should be fixed first. She's saying we should have a verification of your readiness post this traumatic thing, which normally incapacitates many people.
Right.
A stroke does. And so I don't see that as a strict interpretation of this word, but okay.
Well, and I think that if she was just attacking, you know, people that had strokes as regular people, this is a person that's going into public office. This is somebody who's going to have power over people and have money distributed to them. It's important that people understand how this person is going to be in this capacity in an office.
I disagree. I think, you know, look, NBC is clearly a right-wing news organization. She's clearly an arm of the right wing, asking these tough questions of trying to stop liberal candidates. That's what NBC does, right? They hate liberals.
Are you being sarcastic?
And they're also probably right there. There's no problems at all with Fetterman's cognitive abilities at all, right? Nothing at all. Just shut up and just let him speak and don't get involved in this. He was on Tuesday night. Just watch his very first answer. You can see clearly from his first answer of the night just how sharp he is. So stop asking questions, you ableists.
You're running for a seat that could decide the balance of power in Washington. What qualifies you to be a U.S. senator? You have 60 seconds.
Hi. Good night, everybody.
Yeah. See? Makes a lot of sense. I'm an independent voter, and, you know, I'm watching this to get an answer on where I'm going to come down on this. So maybe not the best way to start a debate. I get that, saying good night to everybody. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt now, right? I don't want to be labeled an ableist here. So here he's asked.
I saw a whole panel.
Yeah.
Discussing, saying, well, no, what he really meant was good evening, because, you know, evening and night, they're both the same thing. So
that's
he meant to
fine.
Say good
I think
evening.
Yeah, I think that that's fine to get a few things, because, you know, in order to lead, we need somebody to understand, but not maybe you don't need to be able to articulate your thoughts, but you need to have them, right? And so maybe we're, you know, maybe what we're saying is, hey, we're overly focused on star quality when it comes to leaders, and maybe we don't do that. We don't need to do that. But then the question becomes, maybe you don't articulate it well because you have some cognitive some lasting impairment. But are the ideas there? And even asking that is being called an ableist.
So here he was at being asked about critical questions on minimum wage. And I think, you know, I'm as an independent voter, like if I'm an independent, I'm watching this, I clearly walk away with the answers. Watch.
Raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. Why or why not? You have 60 seconds.
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. I think it's a disgrace at $7.25 an hour. And how can a man, you know, with, you know, 10 gigantic mansions, you know, has unwilling to talk about a willing wage for anybody? Imagine a single mom trying with two children, trying to raise with them.
Okay. Yeah, makes you can see a lot of wires get crossed. You can see where he's going with it.
I mean, as an independent voter, it makes a lot of sense to me. I really have a good understanding. If I'm sitting on the fence, where does John Fetterman sit on this minimum wage issue? Like, I really have an understanding of it now. I mean, I have my answers. But no, I don't. I'm not even being facetious. I have no idea. Like, what do you do? Like, what is your plan on this? So you support $15 an hour minimum wage? Okay, do you? And why? And how are you going to pay for it?
I think if you really want to take that answer seriously, you would say he thinks $7.25 is too low and a disgrace, and so he would. But this is the problem: is we're having to finish the sentences. He could have.
Well,
you know,
that's what I was going to say.
Would we have said, "Hey, okay, you know, you get your words crossed a lot. This may not go well for you. Would you like to write it out? Is there any other way?" Would we, as a society, say, as long as we know that these are your ideas and there's a different way for you to communicate, you know, Stephen Hawking wrote a whole book, many, in fact. Would we listen? I don't know. But the fact that we didn't even get a complete answer to that means we have to extrapolate what he thinks.
You might have more in common with this like MSNBC panel than I thought on this, because like putting him in the same bracket as Stephen Hawking, I mean, is a pretty big leap. Here's a guy who literally flip-flops on every major issue he's had over the past couple of years. And now cognitively, he can't even complete a sentence and explain his position on this. Like, I don't understand.
Well, what I was going to say too is like, if you have millions of people listening to someone, you cannot in a public office leave it to interpretation, because everybody's going to interpret what he's saying completely differently.
Right. Well, and we're talking about puppets too. There's 100 senators. So what you're saying is, in the way that I make fun of Biden, I mean, he's a puppet. He's literally an empty shirt for the deep state pushing these ideas. I don't think for a second Biden is sitting there crafting these speeches, crafting policy. People are telling him what to say and they're pushing him out there.
Well, I think when you link the two of them, though, you have the larger narrative, in the same way that during the Trump years, when you had Republican senators and Republican politicians behaving badly and maybe some indication that they were philanderers or misogynistic, the press wouldn't really push them on it, that the press that favored Trump, because they thought that that would be linked to some kind of larger narrative about the president and his sort of philandering ways, which were uncomfortable. And so there's this like sort of turning away of other bad behavior from the party that favors them. And there's all this excusing or refusal to link these things from the party that doesn't, or this demonization from the party that doesn't. And we see this now about cognition, because if we say, hey, we really need more, you know, we need somebody who can articulate their ideas, we need someone who's strong, who's fast on the uptake, who has a strong, you know, way to answer questions, then I think that Democrats will say, but we don't have that in the presidency and it's uncomfortable. So how about we just say that's not...
So that's a great point. Like, okay, so our leader of the Democratic Party can't complete a sentence and is clearly cognitively declined, right? So we can't use that. We can't use that. So we have to say blanket. We just need to basically say
cognition's not important. Look who we got in the White House.
And if you challenge it, you're an ableist.
Yes.
So another key critical area in Pennsylvania, of course, is fracking. And a few years ago, Fetterman was unequivocal in telling Pennsylvanians that he is anti-fracking. But now he's flip-flopped on that position big time. And if I'm an independent voter, I want to know where you stand on fracking. Watch.
You're saying tonight that you support fracking, that you've always supported fracking, but there is that 2018 interview that you said, quote, I don't support fracking at all. So how do you square the two?
I do support fracking, and I support fracking, and I stand, and I do support fracking.
Okay. What's more important than anything, though, is a person's ability to pay the bills, the energy bills, pay your mortgage, pay your rent, etc. And inflation is out of control. So where does Fetterman come down on the affordability of things? How will he combat inflation as a member of the Senate? Very important question. Watch.
Exactly, Mr. Fetterman. Do you propose doing that to make it more affordable for a for families?
No, I just believe I just making it that much more. It costs too much, and I believe providing the resources to reduce the tuition to allow families to be able to afford it.
Okay. So if you challenge this, you know, if anyone who thinks his performance was a disaster, then you're an ableist. I thought it was an absolute disaster. I
mean, right, but that doesn't mean that you lack empathy for his condition.
Of course not.
Absolutely, we feel empathy. And
it's
especially
sad.
Watching somebody like that who's trying his best and feels so... I feel like I have like a contact high. Like I'm not able to finish sentences because I'm watching this and I'm so flustered because I understand how that looks really painful and I want to show empathy for that.
Yeah, but it's fine to show empathy for it. But what we should be critically talking about here is the fact that there's a Democratic National Committee that propped this guy up and didn't, back when he had this stroke, say, okay, problem here, let's look at another candidate, because
yes.
and also be honest about his cognitive abilities. You're going to lead one of 100 senators.
But you know why, though? He was a Twitter star during the pandemic. He said a lot of like really, you know, in your face types of things like Pennsylvania, we're going to get vaccinated. We're going to lock down. F you if you don't, you know,
yeah.
I'm ready for COVID deniers. Bring it. They loved him for that reason. And he became a pandemic star, much like Andrew Cuomo. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, David.
Well, and I was going to say it'd be a lot easier to be empathetic if they would just own it. If they would own it and prove that he still has the cognitive, like somehow, but it's instead of just denying it and say, no, he's totally fine. If they would be like, yeah, I've got some issues, but you know, if I can articulate this better, if I can write, you know, like you were saying, write it down
gaslighting.
Or something, like, just prove
yeah.
his cognizance, but they don't, they just try to hide it. And that's what makes it impossible to have the empathy because of the power that's pushing him regardless.
Well, and then you had this MSNBC moment right after this. So right as the debate had ended, MSNBC did, you know, got their immediate assessment of it, and wait till you hear the word ableist being thrown around. Watch this.
Clearly, this was a candidate who was feeling stress, and there was such intense scrutiny, often ableist scrutiny, on how he was going to communicate. And he just did a debate in front of, the nation, you know, an audience of anyone who could listen. And it was so transparent. He did fumble. He did make verbal mistakes. And it was all on view. But I think it's also really interesting. You played a lot of clips. There were moments where he was really strong, including that Bernie Sanders clip,
yeah.
including his very fluent and direct response on raising the minimum wage, I thought was a really strong moment.
So that's what we're giving credit now. You know, there was like one or two moments where he, you know, he had it together. Like, that's what we should be focused on.
Did she hear the same minimum wage clip we did?
I know. I'm like,
that's a good point.
Okay. I don't understand. I mean, I really can't wrap my head around it. I mean, let's skip ahead a little bit, Philip, here. John, the Philadelphia Inquirer told its readers that Fetterman won the debate. Like, that's how bad it's gotten. Fetterman won the debate with an average score of 4.3 out of 10 compared to Dr. Oz at 4.1 out of 10. Oh, so John Fetterman beat Dr. Oz in this debate. Okay, thanks Philadelphia Inquirer, 4.3 to 4.1. Liz Plank then tweets, Dr. Oz just gave a masterclass on how to bully people with disabilities, she says. Really? So by debating him, like
well,
that's a problem?
Someone who is able to have a debate, I guess, makes someone else look, it looks like you're dunking on him.
You're an ableist.
That's extremely unfair.
Right.
So, to say that you should not have brought your A game to a debate with someone who can't play their A game when, you know, when he started running for the race, he could. And so,
well,
yeah,
how
let's
would he
blame
know if
the
he didn't have an
A
game? Because he hadn't faced him yet. He hadn't debated with him yet. And it's like, if this was his like first public appearance, how did he know he wasn't going to
Right.
perform?
Yeah,
like,
you're right. Good point. Yeah. I mean, he prepared himself the best that he could for this debate. Both gentlemen did. And so why deny Dr. Oz the ability to come and do his best?
Right. Oh, he needs to know he because he's an ableist then. If he does his best, then he is he's picking on him. He's a bully.
I guess what Dr. Oz should have done is he should have been like, what Fetterman is trying to say here is, you know, he doesn't like 725. He thinks like he should have just clarified everything he said for him to make it so that, you know.
And yeah, that would have been
so
nice.
Now I'm gonna rebut what he actually said,
right?
Not what you heard.
He could have asked that would have been a very actually really skilled way of doing it.
Yeah.
Like what I think
he said was that he doesn't like 725. So I'm gonna respond to that in case you have a problem with that. No.
Right. Like yeah, okay. We know you had a stroke. I'm just gonna. You tell me if I'm saying this wrong for you, John, like you think this, right? You're this is your position on fracking. Okay. I just want to be clear. All right. Thank you. Now here's my response.
And I think that we have covered a cognitive ability a lot on this show when we talk about the president, because he's running low on it. Yeah. He is too tired and he's too impaired at this point to be making such critical decisions and leading an entire nation when it's a dangerous time of war, whether Congress declares it or not. And I really think that this sort of denial, this cognitive dissonance of the fact that one leader is really struggling has to extend to the rest of his party. And that's a shame because that does a disservice to a lot of people.
So,
well, and you want, I have to wonder how much geritol flows through the House and Senate, because there's so many of these. I mean, listen to Pelosi. She's kind of declining, and like they stumble over words. Yeah. We've got so many elderly people running this country.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't know when to retire.
But John Fetterman is not elderly. But I think that the argument applies is how can you have empathy with someone and also say you can't be a leader? This is not your time. I'm sorry.
There's other things you can do. Maybe not be one of two senators from Pennsylvania in one of the most important states in the country when you have 100 senators and we're literally on the verge of nuclear war and we're facing massive inflation and a major crisis. Maybe that's not the best time to put this person up right now. But of course, these debates aren't for hardline Democrats or for hardline Republicans who always pull the lever for their party. These debates are for the undecided voters, the independents. So how do they see this debate? Watch this.
I got to tell you, it was very, very difficult to watch. John Fetterman clearly presented that he's not physically capable of serving in the U.S. Senate. Yeah, I'm a registered independent, and generally these debates are not for the ideologues, right? They're for the people that are somewhere in the middle and really want to hear from the candidates. And I don't know how anybody in their right mind who are in the middle like me could possibly vote for John Fetterman. It was unbelievable. I feel sorry for him that his campaign and his family put him in that position. It was really, really difficult to watch.
There you go. Let us know your thoughts on this in the chat below. Where do
is
you think
is that guy an ableist?
Is he an ableist? Are you an ableist? We've got more news to get to here on the show. Please, if you subscribe, your name will pop right up here on the big screen. So let's talk about these COVID mandates.
All right. Well, New York City is going to fight back against a ruling that ordered the city to reinstate all unvaccinated employees and pay them back pay. This ruling came on Tuesday, and New York City says, nope, we're not doing that. So let me tell you about the ruling, and then we're ask the question, how can New York fight this? The state Supreme Court said that the city was wrong when it fired approximately 1,700 employees for not taking the COVID vaccine, especially since now, this is according to the judge, there is no evidence that the vaccine prevents the spread of the virus. The city argued that it could fire these employees for public health reasons. But the vaccine mandate had a truly elitist hole in it, in that it did not require this mandate to be instated for athletes, artists, and performers. How can you say you're following the science when you give a certain group of privileged people who perform in front of the masses a vaccine pass? I don't understand that at all. And that's fine for public health. Well, obviously you can't. Judge Ralph Porzio called this a violation, and he said it's a violation of the law that requires all persons to be treated equal. Here's from his ruling. He says that though the city employees are often held to a higher standard than employees in the private sector, there's no rational reason for vaccination mandates to distinguish city workers, athletes, performers, and other private sector employees. He says either there's a mandate for all or there's a mandate for none. So you poked a bunch of holes in all of your scientific backing when right. you gave elitists a pass. This is obviously just one case, but it is a precedent-setting case. Lawmakers have to defend what they did during the pandemic and how they, as Carol Roth, a great author, says, picked winners and losers. So in this case, the city picked the losers, which is city sanitation workers. Why pick a fight with them? And they picked their winners, artists and athletes. Here's another great example of this. While the rest of us were told we had to lock down and our children could not go to school, Saturday Night Live was allowed to keep on going because they were deemed essential workers. How did they get away with that? Well, in the fall of 2020, SNL filmed in front of a live audience at a time when no live audiences were allowed, and by paying audience members $150 each so that they could technically qualify them as cast members.
What?
Now, this is an insult, of course, to bars, local theaters, but especially schools. I am always going to get pissed off on behalf of children that couldn't go to school.
Yeah.
Children who, like I mentioned, when our children had their first performance after the pandemic started to ease, I burst into tears for all these kids who could not perform live mm-hmm. when it was their passion during their, you know, school careers, but Saturday Night Live can.
Right.
That's just utter shit.
They're essential because of their terrible comedy.
Right. But my children or children in New York who wanted to like do their local production of Our Town are less important.
Right.
Okay. The court says that this is essentially what's called disparate treatment. It says here, granting exemptions for certain classes and selectively lifting vaccination orders while maintaining others is simply the definition of disparate treatment. Which could mean that other industries can point out disparate treatment in the courts. And I hope they absolutely do. For instance, Carol Roth tells the story of a woman in California who spent $80,000 retrofitting her restaurant to be able to serve outside, was closed down anyway because of new rounds of lockdowns. But in the same parking lot, craft services could serve outside, the same thing she was willing to do because they were filming a movie.
So they had tents set up that they could serve food to actors.
In the same way she was going to. So no to the private sector, but yes to movie stars.
Of course.
Again, I'm just going to use the same saying. That's utter shit. A few other things this judge said that we hope becomes precedence is about the authority of the health commissioner who brought down this ruling. He said the public health commissioner cannot enact a term of employment or exclude someone from entering the workplace, and especially not when that term of employment did not exist when someone started employment. The court says that if you want to do that, then you have to go to the unions. In the next slide, he says, how can a condition of employment be created during the term of employment? This court believes that a new condition of employment cannot be imposed upon these employees when it did not exist when they accepted employment. The court says it understands the idea of an emergency, but he makes this point, you have to justify an emergency, not just because politicians all say so. He points out that when the mandate went into place, daily case numbers in New York were down. So here you have the first incidence of a judge saying, you have to justify these emergency numbers.
Hallelujah.
This, again, I think is precedent setting because the rest of us who have had to live under these emergency settings are going to ask governments, how are you doing this? If a judge says you have to answer for it, then answer for it. About this emergency, he says it's supposed to be temporary and not affect people's lives forever. Here's this quote again from his ruling. The question presented is whether the health commissioner has the authority to enact a permanent condition of employment during a state of emergency, right? This should not affect people's lives forever. It should not be a power grab that you hold on to, which you can see it's like a little kid with chocolate that politicians are just like, I'm not letting this go.
Like Trudeau.
Out of my cold, dead hands, I will give up this power. The judge brings up the point that we now all accept that the vaccine does not prevent the spread of COVID. This is a two pages of the ruling, which is why it looks like this. But he says, being vaccinated does not prevent an individual from contracting or transmitting COVID. At the day of the decision, CDC guidelines regarding quarantine and isolation were the same for unvaccinated and vaccinated individuals. So, you know, this was about their... This was never about stopping the spread for other people. In fact, many of these employees asked for exemptions, and the judge said they were given denials that were vague. So you couldn't even justify why you were letting them go. And he said, you know, while they were being appealed, they were let their decisions. They said these people were willing to keep testing if you just wanted to prevent the spread. And they said no, which doesn't make sense, because if you're willing to test every day,
right,
then you are preventing the spread more than a vaccination, and they wouldn't give them that option. So the judge ordered that they reinstate full employment of these people, that they pay them back salary, and they propose a judgment of how much they will pay them by November 10th. But the city say no, they're going to file an appeal. They're not going to do it. And my question is, how are they going to defend this? How are they going to say that the mandates were not disparate when they had these options to not comply for artists? How can they argue that a vaccine mandate has any more relevance now? And why fight against these people? Even the judge says, these people are not your enemy. The city had made a case that these are people who interact with people, so we need them vaccinated. And the judge said, that no, they're not. He says, this argument is patently incorrect. These petitioners work outdoors and have limited interaction with the public. So,
yeah, how many, when you're out with your, look, our sanitation worker comes like early in the morning. I don't ever see the individuals.
They're gone before you're out the door most of the time.
I'm not hanging out in the street with them. I mean, occasionally if I'm walking the dog, I might wave to them like 30 feet away and say, hi, good morning to you. But we're not like, you know, hanging out and having coffee. It's ridiculous.
And, you know, the title of their job is sanitation. Without them, cities will fall into extreme disrepair and disease.
Right.
They are risking their lives to go out and presumably pick up bacteria and disease. They did it before there was a vaccine. They do it in extreme heat, extreme cold. You know, these are the last people to pick a fight on. And, you know, also, again, they worked when nobody else would. So we're going to watch to see how the city thinks it could possibly defend this, because I don't see how they could. It just seems so mean-spirited.
Well, yeah, and I love the judge's ruling, though, to figure out like what the damages will be here, because it's not just, oh, we'll give you back pay, go backwards retroactively and give you your job back to back when you were fired. Also, it's the mental damage, right? It's the
emotional
damage. Like whatever else you went through as a result of being fired during that amount of time.
And your credibility.
Yeah.
Like think of the credibility that people see them as anti-vax and all these other things that they probably were called.
Right.
Right. Or what about bills that they couldn't pay that have accrued charges and interest?
Right. It affected their credit score as a result of it. We know that that's the case, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe they were evicted because they couldn't even pay their bills anymore.
Why is this on the city of New York and not the hospitals that did it? Like the city of New York is going to defend the hospitals or the hospitals? Like how is that the city is responsible for back pay?
Well, what hospitals are involved?
It was the sanitation.
Well, they're the ones that fired the staff.
Oh, no, this is sanitation workers specifically that were represented. They worked for the city of New York. They pick up trash.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you meant all like them and all the medical staff that were fired.
No, this will have an applicable ruling to private employees as well. But this is specifically about government employees that were paid by taxpayers and worked for the government.
So the few thousand that were in those particular roles, but it's starting to spread. I mean, you're going to see much bigger, and you're right. We're going to start to see maybe this is now precedent for these other cases, specifically in that state. Here you can have the Supreme Court ruling on this. Like, can't go beyond the Supreme Court unless it goes all the way to Washington in this situation.
Well, it's the state Supreme Court. So right. Does this go even further? Who knows? But I do think we're going to continue to see cases like this. And again, I feel like it's such a mean thing to pile on trash collectors.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they want it. It's just to keep power, keep the power to do so.
Well, let us know your thoughts on this in the chat below. We want to thank all of you for subscribing. We're not going to do super chats tonight. Thank you, though, for your super chats. We've seen them coming in. We are on a time crunch tonight. So we really appreciate all of your support. We want to remind you to go to redacted.inc. That's the website to go to and to sign up to get our newsletter first thing in the morning. We'll have a newsletter first thing tomorrow morning. We'll have updates on this. What's going on with this nuclear dirty bomb situation. We'll have updates on the election. Everything else that we've been covering here, we'll keep our keep on top of. So redacted.inc is how you sign up for the Redacted newsletter. And we want to thank all of you for a great week. And we'll see you real soon. Thank you, everyone. Bye now.